Hello and welcome to another edition of Digital Flotsam. I'm P.W. Fenton. This show will be a podcasting first. I believe, and please don't tell me if I'm wrong, that this is the first time in recorded human history that one podcast has told the same story twice, using the same music and sound effects told from two different points of view. It's unprecedented. It's unheard of. It's unnecessary, but I'm doing it anyway. Regular Flotsam listeners will remember the recent edition in which my daughter related a harrowing experience. I said then that I would have to relate my own version of that story someday. I also got a crazy idea in my head that I will tell my side of the story using the exact same music and sound effects as my daughter's version of the story did in episode 36. My side of the story. My Anglo daughter Billy and I have always had a close relationship. My Italian daughter Kim and I have also had a close relationship, but this is about Billy. Kim, please don't ever tell Billy, but you've always been my favorite. Billy, by the way, is spelt B-I-L-L-I-E, and there is no middle name. Billy was named as I drove my ready-to-burst wife to the hospital. We had decided on a boy's name, Dylan, but we had never actually decided on a girl's name. Between contractions, my wife said, "What are we going to name the baby if it's a girl?" I thought for a few seconds, and then it came to me. Billy. Just Billy. With an I-E. Roz took to it instantly, and Billy was named. When Billy was very young, she and I made a pact. I asked her to, as my best pal, as I called her, promise me that she would always tell me the truth. That she would never, ever lie to me. She promised, and for many, many years I felt quite secure that if I asked her a question, I would get the truth, no matter what the question was. Billy felt an incredible obligation to keep that promise. I remember a mid-December night around 1977 when I was going to bed. Billy and her older sister Kim had gone to bed much earlier, and like all kids that age, had to be scolded about giggling and playing and not going to sleep like they were supposed to. As I laid in my bed, I could hear them talking and laughing and generally rustling about. It was very late, and I had lost my patience. I got up out of bed and stomped my way towards their room. Clearly, they heard me coming, because as soon as I entered the hallway and headed towards their room, I could hear them scurrying about as though they knew Daddy was coming, and they had to hide whatever they were doing. I threw open the bedroom door precisely at the moment that they were jumping back in their beds. Being a parent, I immediately worried about what they were doing that they were trying to conceal. I went straight to the less experienced Billy. "What were you doing?" Billy's eyes showed fear. I wondered to myself, oh shit, what could they have been doing? I repeated myself a notch or two louder. "What were you doing?" Billy began to cry. Now I was really worried. What in the world could they have been doing that Billy would be so scared to tell me? I used my ace in the hole. "Billy, what about your promise?" That immediately turned up her crying a few notches. Oh no, I thought. What could they have been doing? I pulled out all the stops. I said, "Billy, you promised me that you would always tell me the truth. I thought you were my best pal." She started really bawling uncontrollably. I knew I had chosen the right words. She looked at me and said through the tears,
I know that I said I would always tell you the truth, but I can't. It has something to do with Christmas.
Instantly, I felt so bad. I played back the sounds I heard in my head, and instantly, I knew what they were. They were wrapping Christmas presents. Not just Christmas presents, a Christmas present for me. I bent down and kissed them both. I said, I understand. I'm sorry I got angry, but it's really late and you need to go to sleep now. There's plenty of time before Christmas. I walked back to my bedroom, deeply moved and impressed by Billy's handling of an apparent moral dilemma. Okay, so now we jump forward almost a decade. And although both of our girls are still very honest with Mom and Dad, they have learned to be less voluntary in that honesty. I mean, why risk disapproval if you don't have to? Okay, now we're getting to the meat of this story. You've got to picture this. You have to imagine what this would be like. I am a police officer. My current assignment is to work at the police academy, creating video training programs for other police officers. My phone rings, and it's my wife, Roz. She says, Honey, I don't have a lot of information. I'm telling you all that I know. A woman down the street from us just called me at work, and she said that an ambulance just took Billy to community hospital. Her friend said she fell out of a tree and hit her head. The woman said she wasn't moving. I went straight to my boss and related the phone call. All he said was, drive carefully. He knew that being a cop and driving a blue and white Tampa police car, I would be traveling the 35 miles back to where I lived under lights and siren. Not in any way legal, but also in no way resistible. At the emergency room, just as my wife and her father were coming out the front door. They explained that they had just seen Billy and that she was unconscious and wired up to all kinds of machines. They said that the ambulance crew had been told that she had fallen out of a tree.
The tree.
And hit her head. They said they were going back to our neighborhood to see if they could get any more information from her friends. This was before the days of cell phones, so I was just lucky that we had crossed paths and I had learned this much. They ran off and I entered the ER waiting room. I walked up to a big unmanned counter. I could see through an open doorway what appeared to be my daughter on a gurney with tubes coming from her and all kinds of medical folks scurrying about. A guy wearing scrubs came out of the room and walked towards me. I was still in my police uniform. That's probably why anyone noticed. I probably would have been ignored otherwise. The guy introduced himself. He was a doctor. He asked why I was there. I told him who I was and what I knew. He said, "Oh, Mr. Fenton, your daughter is still unconscious. I just now sent her for a brain scan." I said, "What is your diagnosis so far?" As a police officer, I had learned how to hide and even suppress my emotions and act professional in the most stressful of situations. But you can imagine what was happening to my insides. He said, "Well, it's kind of difficult to say at this moment. The CAT scan will tell us more. We want to be certain about what we're up against. We don't know why your daughter is unresponsive. Could be a mild concussion. It could be serious brain injury. It could be alcohol related. Or it could be..." Whoa! I cut him off. "Why did you mention alcohol?" To which he instantly replied, "Oh, 'cause she smells like a brewery." Instantly, my cop brain put the whole thing together. I breathed a sigh of relief. I said, "Did you draw blood? What's her BAC?" 0.23 was the reply. BAC stood for blood alcohol content. It was measured in a percentage of the blood's makeup. It meant that Billy's blood contained 0.23% alcohol. From my police experience, I knew that 0.35 could be fatal. So my next question was, "Is it going up?" Often, when a policeman encounters a drunk driver, they've just stopped drinking. And not all of the alcohol in the drunk's stomach has entered their bloodstream yet. Because of that, if their blood alcohol reads 0.30 or more, they are taken directly to the hospital on the chance that the level might be rising to a fatal level. The doctor answered, "Well, we won't ever know. I suspect it was rising, but we pumped her stomach." Never was anyone on earth happier to know that his 11-year-old daughter was passed out drunk. She was not in a coma. She was snockered. There was a long wait before we were allowed to see her. Eventually, Roz, her father, and her mother returned, and my other daughter and her boyfriend showed up as well. Roz and her father explained that as they began to talk to each of Billy's neighborhood friends individually, they began to suspect that they were being lied to. My father-in-law was a retired policeman himself. Eventually, they got one of the younger kids to cop out to the fact that they had all been drinking at her friend Barry's house, and that Billy was pretty drunk when she fell out of the tree. I filled him in on what I had learned, and we waited, a good bit relieved that we apparently didn't have a dying daughter. We had a stupid daughter. The doctor eventually told us that Billy was in the recovery room and that we could go in to see her. The nurse there said she was beginning to wake up, and we all began calling to her. Billy. Billy. We were all standing there as her eyes began to open, blinking in the bright light of the recovery room. She looked around, trying to focus on each of our faces, and then all of a sudden, it was clear she had figured out where she was and who she was looking at, and she burst into tears. Her doctor eventually came in and told us that he was going to keep her overnight for observation. He was concerned about the number of fire ant bites she had received and was worried about a potential bad reaction.
Fire ant, a stinging ant, specifically any of numerous small, fiercely stinging omnivorous ants, principally found in warm regions.
We went with her to her hospital room. We talked her into opening up the back of her hospital gown so we could look at the bites. It was horrifying. I personally had been bitten around 20 or 30 times by fire ants once, and I couldn't imagine how drunk I would have to be not to react to the hundreds and hundreds of bites she seemed to have all over her back. We left her to sleep it all off. As we rode home, Roz and I discussed how we should react to this episode. Would we put her on restrictions? Confine her to quarters? Forbid her from watching MTV? Pretty quickly, we both reached the same conclusion. Nothing we could do would be as effective as waking up in an emergency room covered in painful ant bites. If that didn't teach her anything, nothing would. Oh, and, Billy, don't say anything to your sister, Kim, but you were really always my favorite. And so we have reached the end of another Digital Flotsam. Hopefully, you are a little bit older and a little bit wiser as a result of that accomplishment. You can comment on this show via my blog at digitalflotsam.org. And you can find show notes about anything I played on this podcast there as well. And now, as always, I ask young master Alex Waller to step up to the mic and give us his traditional closing words.
And P-Dub, hold it. The microphone.